My name is Mark, and if you don't know who I am, and I'm Pastor Mike has assigned me the to introduce to you the book of Daniel, and so I'll be in Daniel chapter 1 this morning. It's a long chapter, so I might skip through some of the verses, but I do want to get to verse 8, which is where I'll be landing this sermon. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hands with some of the vessels of the house of God, and he brought them to the land of Shinar, which is Babylon, to the house of his God, and placed the vessels in the treasury of his God. Then the king commanded Ashpenaz, his chief eunuch, to bring some of the people of Israel, both of the royal family and of the nobility, youths without blemish, of good appearance, skillful in all wisdom, endowed with knowledge, understanding learning, and competent to stand in the king's palace, and to teach them the literature and the language of the Chaldeans, which is another word for Babylonian. The king assigned them a daily portion of the food that the king ate and the wine that he drank. They would be educated for 3 years, and at the end of that time, they would stand before the king, basically into the public service of Babylon. Among them were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah of the tribe of Judah. And the chief of the eunuchs gave them names. Daniel he called Belteshazzar, Hananiah he called Shadrach, Mishael he called Meshach, and Azariah he called Abednego. Those names will become familiar in chapter 4. Here's the verse I want to focus on today. Verse 8, but Daniel resolved that he would not defile himself with the king's food and with the wine that he drank. Therefore he asked the chief of the eunuchs to allow him not to defile himself. And God gave Daniel favour and compassion in the sight of the chief of the eunuchs. And the chief of the eunuchs said to Daniel, I fear my lord the king, who has signed your food and your drink. For why should he see that you are in worse condition than the youths who are of your own age? So you would endanger my head with the king. And then Daniel said to the steward whom the chief of the eunuchs had assigned over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, test your servants for 10 days. Let us be given vegetables to eat and water to drink. And then let our appearance and the appearance of the youths who eat the king's food be observed by you. And deal with your servants according to what you see. So he listened to them in this matter and tested them for 10 days, and at the end of the 10 days it was seen that they were better in appearance and fatter in flesh than all the youths who ate the king's food. So the steward took away their food and wine they were to drink and gave them vegetables. And as for these 4 youths, God gave them learning and skill in all literature and wisdom, and Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. Now you'll be pleased to know that I'm not going to focus on the fasting bit today. Obvious reasons, I would think. Wayne, don't laugh too much. This has become like a YouTube sensation, the Daniel fast, eating just vegetables and water and stuff like that. As you can see, I don't follow that. I won't focus on that, but actually it's a key part of the story because that's what Daniel is going to be resisting in chapter 1. What I am going to focus on is actual Daniel, the human being, here, and his need to stand up for his convictions. And then at the end, I'm going to try and sort of bring it all together with some application that may or may not apply to your life, and then we're going to eat the processed meats. First thing, we often read Old Testament books like Daniel and we think they're just like morality stories that you tell children. We tell a story of Daniel and David and Goliath, and it becomes simplified down to the point of like, we need to show courage. And it's actually a little bit more than just showing courage. And that's what happens when we simplify and bring down the Old Testament to that point of just preaching morality. So my goal, my hope today is I'm going to introduce you to the actual man, Daniel, and what are some of the challenges that he had to face. So you understand as we go forward in the book, you understand the greatness of the book, I think, and the greatness of the revelations that come out through it. I wish I could tell you about the prophecies, but I'm going to leave that for other people to do. Pastor Mike, especially in Daniel 7. We'll see how that one goes. I look forward to it. So, can I have the map up, please? So, I've got a little map for you because I'm a geography teacher and I love maps. And it looks really, it looks fantastic on there and easy on the map. I should stop saying the word arm. It's annoying. That is a distance of something like 1,200 to 1,300 kilometres. So that, to put it in our terms, that's like going from Perth to Exmouth. Except Daniel didn't have like those machines that have got wheels on them that can transport you. He had camels and he had his own 2 feet. That's a long way to go. It's also, you notice that the journey is like curved. It's curved because that's the only practical way, because if you go straight through the shortest route, you're going through one of the most awfulest places in the world, the Arabian Desert. So you have to go around, so it actually adds to the journey. Sorry, this thing's falling off. Can I have the timeline, please? So I've got a pretty timeline because I'm also a history teacher. I love them. So let's just have a look at some of these events to put some context to the life of Daniel. So we'll start with that guy up in the top left-hand corner, a guy called Jehoiakim. And now, if you know anything about your Old Testament history, he's right at the end of the existence of the Judah kingdom, and he's one of the last kings to be over Judah. He was the son of a really, really good king, but he went bad. He went bad. And he's universally despised in the Old Testament. He's mentioned in 2 Kings. He's also mentioned in a couple other books, but notably the book of Jeremiah, because the prophet Jeremiah hates him. I'll just give you one story. I love reading in Jeremiah. Is a very hard read. If you ever want to read it, just be aware it's a hard read. But one of the stories that stood out, and when I read Jeremiah, is 36, chapter 36. And it involves this guy, Jehoiakim. Jeremiah gets really, really fired up about Jehoiakim. And so he writes a scroll down and he says, right, you're a bad king, you're evil, and you're going to cop it because God's going to come and get you. Something like that, words to that effect. And Jehoiakim reads it out in public, and then he says, I don't like that, so I'm going to burn it. And so he burns it. Jeremiah, because he's the prophet Jeremiah, he doesn't take that lying down. So he writes it again. Same words, presents it to the king. King still doesn't like it. And then king says, yeah, this time I'm going to tell you not to do it again. Jeremiah still, because he's a great guy, writes it again. And Jehoiakim this time throws him into a deep, dark well to basically sit there and rot. Thankfully, we know that the book of Jeremiah records that friends of Jeremiah, who also hated King Jehoiakim, came and rescued him during the night. Needless to say, he's universally despised in the text. He doesn't end well because the other guy in our story comes along, this guy called Nebuchadnezzar. Now, this is a dude you don't really want to annoy in the ancient world because he has a huge, massive army behind him, and he was the king of Babylonia, modern-day Iraq. And he gets annoyed with Jehoiakim because Jehoiakim decides to do something stupid and rebel against the Babylonians. So he doesn't like Babylon, and now Nebuchadnezzar is coming to get Jehoiakim. And so it's a bad move because Jehoiakim's got no army and he's just got a little tiny pipsqueak of a country. And so Nebuchadnezzar comes along, conquers Jerusalem for the first time. There's actually three different conquests in the story, but we've only got the first one to worry about today. The first one is where Daniel is chosen as one of the handsome young men who get to go on an all-expenses-paid trip to Babylonia. Now, I said arm again. I've got to stop that. Now, he's chosen because he is a member of the elite of society. It says in the book, in the chapter there, he's a handsome young man. Now, that's code for, he's a young teenage boy. He's at the peak of his, powers as a person, as a human. He's also intelligent, smart. So he's obviously in the upper echelon of Judean society. We can also infer from the text that he was chosen for a reason, that, he's a good-looking young man. He fits the criteria for if you're going to steal people away from a country, you get the best and brightest, don't you? All right? So that's what Daniel is. I'm not saying anything about you, Wayne. He just sits up there looking at me like, that's now, the other thing that needs to be inferred in the text, because it's not specified, it's not actually identified in the text, but we can infer it from Daniel's later convictions that somewhere along the line in Jerusalem, he had been exposed to faith in Yahweh, in God. Somewhere along the line, either his mum or dad, or somewhere along the line, he's developed a deep sense of faith and trust in the God of Israel. Now, I in my godly imagination, I actually believe Daniel probably knew Jeremiah, or the prophet Jeremiah. He certainly would have heard of him, because Jerusalem wasn't that big of a place. So Daniel is sent to Babylon, and that's where we pick up the story, but also realise that most of the people of Judah are still left in Jerusalem until 12 years later, Nebuchadnezzar comes back and does a complete scorched earth on Jerusalem. Everything is just burnt. Ark of the Covenant, the temple, the gold, the silver, everything is stripped out of the place. And all that's left there are the very, very poor. So, we'll talk about Daniel. Can you get the photo up, please? The photo, please. The photo brought to Babylon. That's the one. Text says he was brought to Babylon. So we need to read a little bit, from that as well, a couple of things about the journey. We already know it's 1,200 kilometres, but it's more like a refugee column, like we would know today. We've all seen images like this. This is a refugee column of Afghans and Syrians going into Europe. Now, you don't carry anything with you. You don't carry valuables. You're basically walking to some destination. You have no idea really where you're going. And you hope you're going to get there, but along the way, all sorts of things can happen to you. So he's brought in this column to Babylon, and he really has no idea what awaits him in Babylon. So remember, he didn't have the glowing rectangle of information that you guys have. He didn't have access to that. Okay, we have access to an extraordinary range of information that other people have never had in history. But he didn't have that. Neither did he have the Bible in its fullness that you've got on your phones. You know, there were some books that had been written, like Genesis and Exodus and those sort of books. But a lot of the Bible hadn't even been compiled yet, hadn't even been written. Like Isaiah was written, but Jeremiah wasn't. All of those ones we look back on now, they're not written. Okay, so he's, in a sense, he's like having to develop his faith from a very limited range of information that he's got. So that, to me, that rises him in my estimation, considering I struggle with my Christian life and I've got the whole Bible in front of me. The other thing that we can probably infer from his life, the human being, is that given Babylonian custom, when he arrives in Babylon, he was going to be sent into the service of the king and the court. Now, it may not have been, but in my imagination, there is a distinct possibility that Daniel was turned into a eunuch in Babylon, which I won't go into the gory details, but it means chopping off something that is pretty important to most men. And he gets to enjoy the rest of his life without that. And right at the end of chapter 1, he says he was in Babylon till the Persians. So we know from that that's like 80 years into the future. So he never goes back to Jerusalem. Never goes back to go home. He's an old man when the Jewish exiles get back to Jerusalem. So all in all, it's an interesting life, isn't it? It's an interesting story. And like all of us, I think he's a human being and he would have been asking the questions, why? Why me? Why did this happen to me? Like, I had this great future in Jerusalem. I was at the peak of society. And now, in a stroke, in an instant, my life has been turned upside down. All because of the rantings and the ravings of a proud, arrogant king. Surely, does that sound familiar to you? Does that sound familiar? I don't need to spell it out. So, that's all the background to this guy, Daniel. So I want to focus on verse 8. Daniel's determination to not defile himself. Determination here means putting into your mind a course of action. And so we interpreted that as resolution and conviction. So remember, he's just a young guy. He's just arrived in a foreign city. He's completely alone. He's witnessed the conquest of his country and he's probably been made into a eunuch. But in the midst of that, he resolves to not defile himself. Whatever happens to me, even though it is probably the most horrific thing that can happen to a human life, I am not going to give up on my God. I'm not going to give up on my integrity. And I'm definitely not going to give up on everything because some pagan king tells me to do so. Some ranting, proud, arrogant man is not going to let me give up my faith. He took a stand. So why should I care? Why should we care about this book? Because that's what my brother-in-law would say. If he's reading the book of Daniel, he would struggle to understand anything about it. And he would say to me something like, Mark, what in the world are you talking about? Why should I know anything about this guy from so long ago? It doesn't matter. What are you talking about? I actually think it's really an opportune story for us at this moment in history because of everything that's been going on in the last couple of months, the last couple of years, for reasons I'm going to get into in a minute. So let's have a look at why we should be listening to Daniel. First of all, there are some challenges that Daniel faced that we face in our lives. And his response to that challenge is actually a good little example of how to face them in our life. First, Daniel faced the physical isolation from everything he'd ever known. He faced loneliness. Like, I've experienced moments of profound loneliness in my life, and you have too. Here in Daniel, Daniel is telling us that, you know, we face those challenges through the context of prayer and the promises that he'd learned from his mum or dad, or he'd learned from the prophet Jeremiah, his godly friends that came with him. All of those are the resources that we can use to help us when we're facing the physical isolation from everything we've ever known. Secondly, Daniel had to face down some pretty subtle attractions in Babylon that would try to steer him away from his faith. Because he was offered stuff that actually he probably didn't have access to in Jerusalem. Foods, luxuries, accommodations that would not have been possible in Jerusalem. Because you understand, Babylon was huge. We know from history it was massive. And it was filled with luxuries that were beyond the imaginations of any poor, you know, person from anywhere else, not Babylon. Right. I don't know if you've ever felt this, but when you go and you leave Perth and you go to somewhere that's massive, you feel intimidated. I remember in 2007, I went to Japan for 6 months, and I was just a little teacher from Geraldton, of all places. Like, if you've been to Geraldton, you know it's not the high life, let's put it like that. But then I was put into, and I arrived in Tokyo, and it's like, and I was sitting at in the biggest intersection in the world. It's called Shinjuku. And I had no idea what I was doing. It's like this mass load of people and concrete everywhere, and they're shouting at me, and I have no idea because I'm just a little Geraldton boy. That's what Daniel faced. That's what Daniel faced. But there's problems with that, those attractions. There's a lot of things that come with those attractions that are actually harmful. One of the things that we have to be careful of in our society is that we live in a very highly sexualized culture, and Babylon was no different. In fact, later on in the Bible in Revelation, one of the images for the final end time kingdom that's going to be dethroned by Jesus Christ at the end of days is Babylon. And we have to make a stand against this perversion of God's plan. And notice how he did that. This is another thing I want to sort of emphasize with you. Is we got to learn from Daniel here. Daniel didn't respond to Ashpenaz, the king of the chief of the eunuchs, by attacking him. He didn't, like we would do, and get onto X and Facebook and, you know, have a verbal rant about the request. It happens all the time in social media. If you're on social media, it happens all the time. And people think they have the right to, like, bleh, and then they've launched into something that gets a life of its own. And other people come back at you and go, bleh, and it's just horrible in the end. That's not what Daniel does. not what Daniel does. Daniel, well, hello. It's not the first time I've scared children or caused them to cry. Daniel doesn't do that. He offers Ashpenaz another option. Notice in the text he says, test me in this. So he doesn't like go off on a fiery rant. He says, test me in this and see after the 10 days whether I'm better than your guys over there who's eating the food and drink. I think that's a model for how we should like interact with our culture. Like, not to verbally sort of go off on a rant, but actually give people another option, another way of looking at it, gently. Gently. Redirect them. Because one of the things I've learned as a teacher is that my normal instinct is to like, go into something, but that doesn't really sometimes work that well with year 7, 8, and 9. And in year 10, they're well and truly capable of beaming it back to you. So it doesn't really work. Actually, what you need to do is redirect. Give them another option. Give them another way around the problem. That's another thing we can learn from Daniel. Notice that he doesn't give in to the Babylonian way of doing things. So there's this, can you put the Gary Hamlet quote up? I came across this quote from a preacher I like to listen to in from America. Don't agree with him in everything, but I agree with him in a lot. Daniel was forced to live in Babylon, but he did not allow Babylon to live in his heart and mind. I think it's really, really important that we get that distinction. Or as the Bible would say, we live in the world, but not of the world. Or as Paul would say, do not be transformed by the world, but be conformed to the renewing of your by the renewing of your mind. Sorry, I haven't got that in memory. So, there's this challenge. We live in a culture that has become very, very hard and interesting to deal with for us. So can I have the challenges slide, please? Here are just some of the challenges we face in our world today. I'm just going to run through them really quickly because time's marching on, and then I'll finish up. I'm sorry for the big words, but sometimes I don't have any other way of doing it. We live in a hyper-individualistic age. We believe that everything is about ourselves. We're selfish. A lot of people out there are just fundamentally selfish. Not just out there, but also me. I can be very selfish as well. We're also hyper-democratic. We actually believe that we should have a say on absolutely everything, even if we know nothing about anything. Believe me, get into a conversation with someone out there who thinks they know something about the Bible and God, and normally they're upset about the Bible and God and say, I've read the Bible. Well, have you? Oh, yeah, I read a little bit back 25 years ago, and in that, but I wasn't happy. So therefore, I don't talk about it anymore. What's that? That's a desire to have your say in absolutely everything. We're also anti-authority. We don't like people telling us what to do. If you ever have any connection with teachers, you will understand they are anti-authority. Try teaching teachers how to do something. It's not great. It's not great. We're also hyper-relativistic. In other words, everything is about me and my desires, my goals, my opinions, as if I'm more important than anybody else. Hyper-relativistic. We're also anti-God, or more charitably, a lot of people are just indifferent to God. Okay? And finally, we're hyper-polarized between left and right. You're either in the conservative camp or you're in the liberal socialist camp, and unfortunately we've lost the ability to speak to each other properly in between. So some, I'll be honest, I'll put my card, I'm somewhere in the middle. I'm somewhere in the middle. I like some things on the conservative side, but some things, I, you know, somebody came up to me last night and said, I don't mention this to him, but I actually agree with the Greens on anti-gambling. And I said, yes, I agree. I don't like gambling on TV either. So I agree with them on one thing, but I don't agree with them on lots of things. But in our hyper-polarised age, we cannot have a conversation like that, because people just sort of divide into camps and they shout at each other and they can't seem to escape the shouting and the noise and the anger. So that's the challenge we have. So what would Daniel say to us? I think Daniel would say, stand on your convictions. Stand on what you believe to be correct, and stand on the truth of the scripture and the gospel, because that's the only thing in our lives today that really, really has stood the test of time. You know, this has stood the test of time. It's been around for 2,000 years. I won't make any points about the Pope, and so I'll leave that one. All right, I'll finish up. Can I have that picture, that last picture up? And I will end here, and I'll end up soon, very soon. For Daniel, that conviction meant that he had to face a lot of things in his life that were unpleasant. So later on in the story, you're going to learn that his three friends had to make a stand on their convictions about worshipping the idol of the king. And they were thrown in a fiery furnace. It's a great story. But at its heart, it's actually a really horrific story at the same time. You're also going to learn at around about Daniel chapter 9, right at the end of Daniel's life, he's an old man. A very old man at this stage. So, Graham, there's plenty of time for you, buddy. He gets thrown into a lion's den as an old man. Like, when we truly set out our path of living by our convictions, it could actually mean some pretty unpleasant things happening to us. So, in 2024, I went to Italy with my wife, Philomena, and we went to visit the Roman Forum, and we did all that. And then Philomena wanted to go shopping. And I wanted to go to this place, and I'd read about this place 20, 25 years before in a history somewhere. And it's called the Mamertine Prison in the Roman Forum. You know, and today it's a medieval church. It's a massive building overlooking the forum, literally overlooking it. And you go into the church, you pay some money, and there's like two or three circular cells at the bottom of the church. And the church has been built on the foundations of a Roman prison. And it's a prison where they would store or house inmates that were going to be traipsed down to the forum to be executed in the forum. And we know from later church history, pretty solid church history, that the Apostle Paul and the Apostle Peter ended up in this prison, in this circular hole in the ground, just before their executions. Peter was crucified, and Paul was beheaded because he's a Roman citizen. But they were executed because they stood on their convictions, and they said, no, I am not going to give in to the Roman authorities and stop preaching the gospel. And so I went down into this hole in the ground, and I had wanted to be there all the time, but I was astounded at my reactions to being there. I thought I'd be okay with it, but then I thought about the story that I knew, and I thought to myself, I'm not worthy. I'm not worthy of being. I want to be worthy of this. I do. But I'm not there yet. I would have given in. I would have given in. For the sake of saving my own skin, I would have given in. But you know, Paul wrote two books in the Bible from that prison. 1 and 2 Timothy. Can I finish with a little bit from 2 Timothy chapter 4? And I've added a little bit to it just for you guys. Fight the good fight of faith, believers in Kubla. Finish the race well, my friends. Remain faithful to the end, my brothers and sisters. The prize awaits you, a crown of righteousness. This crown awaits all who eagerly desire it. And may the Lord be with your spirit, and may his grace rest upon you. Amen.